Hi, you guys want some cookies? 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 Cookies?
From the new garage, mind the umlaut over the U. It is the Throwback Podcast.
What?
Your source for all things musical pop culture. If you were born in exactly 1980, I am Dan Hansis, and I'm joined as I always am. Holy shit, Bob. You're Bobby Castrone. We're back.
We're back. Dude, I've been waiting in this garage for like a year for you to come back here.
You've been in my home?
I've been in the garage, just surviving on crumbs. And,
wow.
And old Bud Lights.
I've been in here so many times.
You threw all your Bud Lights in the garage when all that stuff awesome. Went down. Yeah.
I called them Bud Mulaney's.
So I've been just surviving on crumbs and Mulvaney's for the past year.
You know,
year.
I heard like faint masturbatory whimpers throughout the past year.
That was me.
And I was like, that sounds a lot like if I were to hear my buddy Bob like pleasuring himself. And then as it turns out, that was happening.
That was exactly
constantly.
What else was I going to do?
You were doing it during some inappropriate times. Some,
I don't
like,
know.
National tragedies. I'd come downstairs and I hear that whimpering.
Dude, I didn't know what was happening. I was just marking the days like a prisoner with little chalk on the walls. But now we're back. And that's
rhythmic
all that
clapping is what I heard a lot of. Rhythmic fapping. Hey, Bob, we are back. How about that?
How about that? A lot of people, you know what I'm just going to say?
A lot of people.
A lot of people didn't think this was going to happen.
A lot of people thought we wouldn't return after a year off and immediately talk about a scenario where Bob's masturbating in my garage for a year straight. But that's kind of the whole idea of this show, isn't it?
I knew if we did come back, that's exactly what we would start with.
Don't we have to, we almost, I feel like, need to reintroduce ourselves a little bit.
Okay, that makes sense. Maybe I'll go first.
Go ahead.
My name is Bob. Birth name Bob, B-O-B.
That's important for people to
that
know.
That is, yeah. Not some Robert, like, playing.
Robert come lately.
Thank you. Yes. No. Legal Bob. Legal Bob
which
here,
is funny.
Which is bizarre. I've never met another legal Bob. So the only legal Bob.
Right.
That's really the most interesting thing about me.
It's but pretty good, though. Like, as far as, you know, baseline origin stories go, that's, it's pretty good.
I'm a male in his late 30s who lives.
Incorrect.
Okay. Oh,
when this podcast started all those years ago, we were kind of, we were easing out of the port of our mid 30s, but now we are firmly, I mean, you're barreling down your mid 40s.
No, I'm
point.
In my mid 40s. You're in your, yeah.
You're and get, I'm you're way behind it. You.
You're
3 months.
You're just a couple of weeks away.
Here's what you need to know about me. I am Dan. I am younger than Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. I don't see anything else that really, I think we're pretty much caught up.
That's really it.
Yeah. So here we are.
Yeah. We haven't really.
Why are we back? Why did we? Because, all right. So
yeah,
we started this podcast in 2017 and we did a bunch of episodes.
I think we started in like 2016.
Maybe 16. I think we did, what, like 200 episodes? Does that sound right?
About 150.
About 150.
About 50.
I don't remember any of them. Bob had to remind me that we were doing the show. When I found this equipment underneath my house, I was shocked that we owned it. I had never seen it before. But we, I would say, you know, post-pandemic, but especially the last 2 years, the output of the Throwback Podcast had slowed to a trickle. And then last year, entirely, it had stopped.
Yeah, we just threw our hands up and just, we couldn't do it. You have this other podcast you do still where you talk about American football
and the gladiators of the gridiron,
and that takes
that's
up
40% of our listeners. That's how they refer to football in the
ooh,
battle.
I guess I never thought of this. Do they have a little button on their device where they can listen to you doing the accent? Like, does it automatically translate you into doing the accent?
That's on the Patreon tier.
Oh, okay.
that I intend to roll out down the line.
That's a great feature.
It is. It also is a great segue, Bob, because it is time to turn the lights back on.
Please yes!
Open the door.
Oh, nothing, thank you.
Nothing is different. We've been here before.
Aww.
Pacing these halls, trying to talk over the silence.
You know, nobody asked for a Billy Joel comeback.
So we're basically the Billy Joel of podcasts. Like, you, the lights were off, and now the lights are back on.
Now, because it's the first Billy Joel single in like 30 years or something, there's something that I just connected, because Billy Joel's your guy.
Yeah.
This, the Billy Joel comeback single, is very similar to the Frasier reboot.
No.
We're like, nobody asked for it.
How dare you?
There's a segment of the population that's going to check it out. But in general, like, it didn't exactly rock the zeitgeist, because everyone was just like, oh, all right.
I don't know what zeitgeist you're a part of, but I was just watching a video today of Olivia Rodrigo freaking out at Billy Joel.
I mean, how much is Billy Joel paying Olivia Rodrigo, by the way?
I don't care, whatever.
I'm a Rodrigo fan.
I know you are.
And she referenced Billy Joel in one of her songs on her first album. But how many times do I have to see Billy Joel and Olivia Rodrigo's in a hyper uncomfortable small chat conversation documented by Billy Joel's handlers and then sent out as far as possible to let people know that Billy Joel is cool?
It is very uncomfortable. That is exactly what's happening.
We're going to talk about Billy Joel.
Because Billy Joel was cool, so we're going to be getting into that.
Well.
Yes, we are.
Billy Joel wore sunglasses. Wait, hold on.
Let me enjoy this. This was honestly the highlight of my year so far, I think.
All right, here we go.
Maybe you don't. Maybe you learn to, and maybe you won't.
All right, let's turn off that.
It's so good. It's so
good. It would
good.
Be good. How about something a little up tempo?
No.
A little bit.
No.
Let's turn it up a little bit, the tempo.
No, go full Billy. Come back, go full Billy, and then start mixing it up. Do maybe like a new take on River of Dreams or something. That'd be fun too.
A new take on River of Dreams. Those are the ambitions.
That's what I want.
For the Billy Joel super fans out there. Yeah, so we are back. We intend, and here is the big news.
Yeah.
Because we've done it before where, oh, here we are again.
Right.
Maybe not after this long a break.
Right.
But we intend to stay. We intend to make 2024 the true comeback, the reboot. And it's not a Frasier reboot, and it's not a Billy Joel reboot.
I mean, I kind of think it is.
It's a legitimate reboot, because I do have to tell you, Bob, I have been getting a lot of people, both on social media and in person. In fact, at the Super Bowl, we were out at a really great restaurant one of the nights in Vegas, and some guy came up to me and didn't ask about the other podcast, the internationally famous Around the NFL podcast. Didn't have any interest in that.
Yeah.
It was this show, this little garage program that he wanted to know about. I did a, again, leading up to the Super Bowl, there was a Irish podcast that asked me to come be part of their live show via Zoom in a pub in Dublin. And guess what, Bob? One of the people asked, when is the Throwback Pod coming back?
Wow.
So that means there's an international hunger for this program, Bob. And this year, we will be in your ears multiple times a month.
Yeah, consistently. That is the plan. Not only the plan, we're going to do it. This is 2.0.
This is the challenge we lay out.
I like that I'm kind of like, I'm your postal service. Like, you're Ben Gibbard. This is an analogy for people born in
exactly 1980.
You're Ben Gibbard. You've got this other like longtime band, but then you put out one little album with this other dude. That's the one that still resonates, that people are still asking about. That's what the Throwback Pod is.
Wow. That is very 1980.
Only like 14 people listening to this enjoyed that.
I barely tracked it, but I did in the end. That makes ATN Death Cab for Cutie.
Yes.
Wow.
Feels about right. Kind of chugging along. So I guess some people are into it.
So what are we doing, Bob? So before we get into tonight's episode, and I'm very excited for what we're going to talk about, because we just recently went on a trip to Big Bear Mountain with our families, as we do every year. Mm-hmm. And we watched The Greatest Night in Pop, the Netflix show documentary about the making of the We Are the World song and video to aid famine relief in Africa. And it is you want to talk about a gorgeous relic of 1980s pop culture. And shout out to Mike Berkowitz, our buddy. He had said, another person who reached out to me said, Throwback Podcast has to come back. When's it coming back? And he specifically threw out this documentary as something he'd like to hear us talk about. And a little light bulb moment. That's a great idea, Burke.
Yeah.
So here we are. We're returning with a, you know, talking about that doc and also the artists that were connected with it, which were the biggest stars in American music circa January 1985.
Right. Like, we're not going to devote the entire episode to the song We Are the World.
Because who would want to do that?
Because we've only done a one song episode once ever, and that was for the New Radicals, You Get What You Give. And that obviously is a superior song and a more important song.
It's so funny because I did, it crossed my mind. I was like, why did we, did the singer die?
I don't know.
Did it vaguely had something to do with the election?
I think we were just all riding high.
Did they play it at the election or?
It was back when we were so happy that, you know, the new era had been ushered in and we were done with the Trump years and we had nothing to worry about ever again.
What's more embarrassing, us doing a podcast about You Get What You Give after Biden got elected, or SNL's Kristen Wiig performing a stone-faced version of Hallelujah the weekend after Trump was elected?
Oh, shit.
What was worse?
Was that our Hallelujah?
That was our hallelujah moment. Anyway, so yes, Bob, how are we going to do this? Because we're talking about other changes. We won't bore you with too many details because we're still figuring it out. But because we're back in a very real way, we're making some changes to the setup for the listeners of the show as well.
Yes, we need you to help us. No, we need you to go to.
How much more do they have to help us? First of all, we should apologize for the past year.
I don't even mean like financially. I mean, just help us. We don't know what the hell we're doing still.
Oh, yeah.
After all these years.
That's true. We're bad at this.
We need you to go to this new website, x.com/throwbackpod. Nobody does that. I'm going to be the X guy.
I love that society was like, nope, we're just not going to give it to you. And it's this super rich dude bought the most popular website on earth to change the name just because he could.
Right.
And we said, no.
Nah.
Nope.
Nah, but I'm with him. So go to x.com.
I stand with Elon.
x.com/throwbackpod to find out kind of how we're going to mix things up a little bit. And more importantly, patreon.com/throwbackpod. You'll notice that on our feed, things might look a little different. We're mixing things up. We'll explain it all on the internets.
And if something is working, we might lean into it more. If something's not working, we will audible. So be patient with us. But the main thing that I guess you guys need to know is that we are back.
We are. We're back.
That's good. Feels good. I mean,
we've had no time, just the two of us, without wives and kids since we stopped this. I can't remember.
That's true.
Us hanging out talking about me jerking off in your garage. It's been a year.
And I think it would be cool. The one thing I think we did figure out in a sit down at a local tavern in downtown Los Angeles a couple weeks back, it's going to be a mix of albums that we haven't hit before. We are going to continue to do countdown type episodes, mixtapes, things that connected with us in our younger years. But we're also going to revisit some of the albums that we've already done, some with special guests, maybe some with not. We're getting so close, Bob, so close to another Throwing Copper episode. Now we actually have the machinery in place to make it happen.
No, now it's actually part of the plan as opposed to a threat. Now it's something that we actually really plan on doing.
Do you think we could get Ed Kowalczyk for the Throwing Copper 2.0 ep?
Well, only if we could also get Drummer Without the Drumsticks have them reconcile once and for all.
What about Robbie, the bassist from Goo Goo Dolls? Can we revisit?
With the live guys? Can we get them all in here together?
Get them in here.
Maybe.
Just get a whole room. Our own We Are the World, like a throwback pod edition. Nobody can hit the notes.
We can get the guy from Better Than Ezra just to do his huh for you.
No.
I mean, you do it.
Wait, hang on. It was like
the way you move your hands. Yeah, exactly.
Very sexy.
Very sexy.
And I do it justice. All right. Anything else, Bob?
I don't think so.
New episodes, revisiting classics that we have touched on in the previous 6 or 7 years.
Because we don't remember anything we
said. Countdowns. And we can't imagine you do either.
Right.
At this point. I would have to say some of the... And naturally, when we first started the podcast, a lot of the albums that really mattered to us most, we hit, makes sense, early on. Before we figured out how to do the podcast, we had some guests with us. Some were good, some not so hot. And we're gonna, now we get to do it exactly how we want to do it.
Yeah.
Does this sound, as I say it, like the over the hill artist that Everclear is an example? Who?
Why would I mean why?
Like, oh, now that I'm older, I'm going to re-record some of my past hits and repackage. And it's like, no, only Taylor Swift can do that.
I have a playlist called The 90s But Worse, and it's all of the bands that redid their songs.
Why would anyone listen to that?
I can't even listen to it, but I still have it.
Who is that for?
I just want it to exist.
I wonder what this show is for and who is it for. That is a playlist that I cannot imagine.
Well, I'm going to share it on my ex so then everybody could see it.
Man, you're really siding with Musk on this one.
The guy's made some good cars.
All right. And thank you, of course, to Jackie Daytona, who you heard first today. And I was just texting with Jack Doyle, the man behind Jackie Daytona, the long-awaited follow-up to She's So Hot, coming out summer 24.
All right, good.
Reboot. See, he takes his time.
It's another reboot.
Another reboot. Just everyone taking their time.
2.0s all over the place. Wait, no, stop it.
What's up?
Stop it, because if we're going to do this, we're going to do this right.
Well, tell me. Tell me. What do you mean, Bob? I don't remember how to do the show anymore. I mean, whatever you're about to say is going to be a glorious surprise.
I mean, we're going back to March 7th, 1985. The day that We Are the World was released onto the world.
Oh my God. You mean the song that nobody realized the song actually starts like this, by the way. That sounds horrible. They're definitely ripping off, do they know it's Christmas there?
Oh, for sure.
Which, well, you know, music, sonically, like, I wouldn't say that's the greatest piece of music ever.
Well, agree
you to, need to liberally borrow from that song.
Agree to disagree.
By the way, we're going to get into Bob Geldof, too, a little bit.
Another good Bob, but yeah. He's a Robert. But we'll get into that, too. I think we just
do. Did we know that he's a Robert?
I mean,
I'll look it up.
I'm sure you will. March 7th, 1985.
Bob Geldof. Sir Bob Geldof.
I know. He's got that on me. I may have the actual Bob name, but he's got the sir.
Well, he's still alive, so we're on fire. Okay, he is a Robert. Go ahead.
Other things happening in March 1985 besides
Don Mattingly was in spring training about to be the MVP of the American League. What a season.
That's the only thing I wrote down.
324, 35 homers, 145 RBIs. What a player. All right, we're done here.
Now we're back in the swing of things. Very 80s. You can't get more 80s than this then. On March 11th, Mikhail Gorbachev.
Mickey.
Just took the reins.
Oh, he took over.
Took over.
Wait, that was short. See, I thought as an 80s baby that Gorbachev was in power for like 100 years.
Yeah, it was like eight.
Like he was a commander during World War II or something. And then, because then he lost power in like the early 90s, right?
Yeah.
Yeltsin took over. So you're telling me it was an 85 to like 89 sitch? So he ruined the USSR? Is that what happened here?
I mean,
Bob. Let's get into this geopolitics.
I can answer questions about his birthmark. That's really as far as I can get in terms of like
Frank Drebin was able to wipe it down.
Exactly. That's all I really know.
Made it disappear.
In the documentary Naked Gun, Frank Drebin did remove it from his head.
All right, Bob's going to talk a little Cold War, and then he's going to get into a little Israel Palestine after the break. So
here was my favorite thing I found out that happened in March 85.
Yes.
A little tidbit I completely forgot about, but rang a bell. On March 27th, professional wrestler Hulk Hogan acquiesced to put interviewer Richard Belzer in a headlock, resulting in Belzer passing out, hitting his head on the floor, requiring 9 stitches.
This is on Letterman, right?
I think it was on Belzer's show. Was he hosting Letterman?
I don't know.
I don't even know. But he sued Hulk Hogan for $5 million, and they settled out of court.
Hogan is just a magnet for this stuff, huh?
4 days later, WrestleMania 1.
How about that? Cool.
Yeah.
At Madison Square Garden. I think the main event of that, it was like Hulk Hogan and Cyndi Lauper against Mr. T and like Mr. Wonderful.
Very close. Hulk Hogan and Mr. T beat Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mr. Wonderful.
Wow.
Yep. Birthdays.
Cyndi Lauper? She was the chauffeur,
I think. She was involved.
Who's going to come up in a little bit as well.
Yes, she will.
That's just sliding right back into this.
Look at us. It's almost like we never left.
Doesn't seem very good, though. I wouldn't say this would be a good podcast.
Should we warn people if this is their first time? This is not good.
Oh, no. They've listened to the first 20 minutes. They are fully aware this was a mistake.
Got it. You know it wasn't a mistake?
What?
The best TV theme song that premiered this month in 1985.
Fuck. Let me see if I remember the words. Streets out of China.
Never met her before. Who cares? When you drop kicked your jacket as you came through the door.
No one's there.
But sometimes things get turned around and no one's spared. All hands look out below. There's a change in the status quo. Gonna need all the help that we can get. To our new arrival, life is more than mere survival. We just might live the good life yet.
Everyone sits on the couch. Does it become an animation at the end?
No, it's all stills kind of mixed up. Very, you know. Boom. Stills mixed up with live
Mr.
footage.
Belvedere. Oh, starring the guy who sat on his own balls, forcing them to cease production for an entire day.
What a legacy. What a legacy.
Bad beat. Look it up. That's a true story.
Yeah.
He was a butler for like a Midwestern family, I want to say. And in real life, he sat on his balls.
And shut down production.
Toughy. Euchre. Bob Euchre was the dad.
All right, we'll do this quick.
How about Euchre?
Yeah.
The lead in a sitcom in the 80s.
What a career. Good run. Good run for Euchre. Movies that came out that month. Dan. The Care Bear movie. I remember seeing that in the theater because I was five. Don't make fun of me.
I don't know, Bob.
Don't make fun of me.
Really, what you weren't the demographic for the.
It was really good. I was a very sensitive boy.
Okay,
and it was a great movie.
Okay, what else?
Desperately Seeking Susan.
You know what? I was watching something. Oh, I put on YouTube just scrolling through, and it was like hits of the 80s videos.
Yeah,
and Get Into the Groove by Madonna came on. And, you know, it was the old standby of, you know, playing clips of the movie.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, I bet this would be a really fun movie to revisit.
So 80s. Yeah.
Like, and also I always had a real thing for Roseanne Arquette.
Same. I don't think we've ever talked about that.
There's something about Roseanne Arquette.
Oh, for sure.
There are certain elements of her that make her special, and I always liked her. So the idea of a young Arquette and a young Madonna.
By the way, give me any Arquette. I'm in. Rosanna, Patricia.
Alexis.
David. Just keep going. I'm in.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. I mean.
I had to say it.
You did.
Can't not say it.
No, you said it. It's good. Thank you.
I have an Alexis Arquette take that I can't share, but I will off
sure
mic.
You do.
I will off mic. He was excellent in Wedding Singer.
Yes, and in Miracle Beach.
He was in Miracle Beach with Dean Cameron?
Yeah.
Shoot.
Well, we should talk about our Dean Cameron story at some point. Maybe at not this episode. Point. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if we have. We saw Dean at a premiere of a movie that you produced.
Yes. The Wine Club premiere.
And I had met Dean earlier. Dean was as an actor who, you know, had some big time roles in the 80s. And
Chainsaw from
the 90s.
Summer School. Chainsaw from Summer School is the thing he's probably most known for.
And I told Dean that, hey, just wanted to say that this is at the after party after the premiere. Very nice film too, Bob.
Check it out,
Wine Club. Where can people see Wine Club?
I think they could find
Get
it on...
Get that plug in, Bob.
Yeah, let's do that right now. They could find it on Amazon or... Apple, just go rent it.
I said to Dean that Miracle Beach, a direct-to-VHS movie he starred in with Amy Dolenz, Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees' daughter, and Pat Morita, Mr. Miyagi, in about 1991, and was played incessantly on HBO in the summer of 1995, that it was a very important movie to me in my formative years. You and I had a major obsession with Amy Dolenz off just watching that movie late at night. And I believe he said something along the lines of, yeah, that movie nearly killed me, or I
think that movie broke me.
It broke me, yes.
And you're talking about Miserable Beach.
Miserable Beach. And I at that moment regretted bringing up the film that brought him so much discomfort in his life. But
I think he loved talking about it, though.
What else?
Well, that movie didn't come out that month, but a very important movie did, Police Academy 2.
Police Academy 2, which one would that be?
That was like, the in my mind, the first real Police Academy, because the first Police Academy is literally about the Police Academy. From 2 on, they're cops just being crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is that the one that has...
Bobcat's the bad guy.
Wait, is this the one... Oh, wow. Okay, hang on. Hang on, because I think it is, Bob. Here we go. My favorite moment in Police Academy 2, I remember watching it dozens and dozens of times. Again, if you were born in exactly 1980, you would have a collection of VHS tapes. In this case, they were at my grandmother's house. And so you had about 8 movies to choose from.
Right.
And you just watched the same movies over and over. I remember Dorf on Golf with, what was the actor's name?
With Dorf.
Dorf, but he was... Tim Conway.
Tim Conway.
We had that on the same tape. Was European Vacation.
Oh wow!
Which had a certain scene with Rusty. That
For sure.
There's no way me and my cousin should have been watching that movie. But one of the other movies that was on that tape or that collection of tapes was Police Academy 2, and there's the scene where Captain Mauser is taking a shower and he's the baddie in the movie.
Right.
And Mahoney borrows Tackleberry's glue that he uses for his helmet.
Just you saying these names makes me happy. It just makes me happy.
He borrows the glue and replaces Captain Bowser's shampoo with the glue when he's in the shower. And of course, because it's a movie that came out in 1985, Bowser doesn't check shit. He just puts that shit in his hair.
Of course.
Leading to this.
And someday, I'm going to be captain. And every rookie will go down on his knee. And there'll be nothing but a swing just for me.
They just did the switch.
Yeah, they will be slaves just for me. Yeah, baby, slaves up here.
All right, you just put the glue in.
And they'll say, Captain Mauser.
Police Academy 2. Classic.
Classic.
Man, Mahoney really got one over there on Bowser.
Of course he did.
Bowser.
He was Mahoney.
Epoxy resin he put in his hair.
So good. The number one song in America, Dan.
What a time to be alive, 1985.
Pretty good. And that's a great movie year, but this was before all the really good movies came out. But the number one song in America, When We Are the World, came out, was this one.
Oh. Dang.
Yep. Can't Fight This Feeling by REO Speedwagon. Speedwagon. Not invited to participate.
They were not.
Did not get the invite.
All right, let's listen in a little bit. You know what's crazy? And I want to hear this chorus, but...
I know you do.
What a romantic song it is. What a kind of a soft song it is.
Yeah, they're pretty soft.
And it's a melodic pop song that takes its time getting to the chorus.
Number one.
It's crazy that there was a time in the not-so-distant past where this was the song.
I mean, it was the pretty distant past.
At this point,
This and Mr. Belvedere were ruling the world.
He sat on his own ball sack.
The poor guy.
How big were your balls to do that?
How just kind of unaware are you spatially of your legs and your testicles?
I don't know. Turn it up, Bob.
All right, here we go.
Into the shore and throw away the oars forever.
Well, I never noticed that lyric. And throw away the horrors forever. All right, and for just to give you an idea of how things have changed, at the moment of us recording this show, this is the number one song in America.
Okay.
I'm vanilla, baby. I'll choke you, but I ain't no killer, baby. She 28, telling me I'm still a baby. I get love in Detroit like Skillet, baby. And the thing about your boy is...
You know who this is?
Jack Harlow.
It's good. So you have that 13-year-old son energy right now.
I have a 12-year-old son who sings this in the house and his mom yells at him. Nothing like a 12-year-old singing, I like whips and chains.
She's an alpha, but not around your boy. She could cry around your boy. Hold on. Don't know I'm kind of into it.
It's not bad.
Yeah. But they lied about your boy going dumb and it's something idiotic about your boy. So yeah, we're a long way out of 1985.
I just noticed for the first time, he kind of has the same flow as Lil Dicky. Maybe that's why I like him.
That's interesting.
Kinda.
All right, so we're caught up. 1985.
And REO Speedwagon, by the way, sneaky good karaoke band, because lead singer's good but not great. So you could hit it. Like, he's not like Journey. You're not going to like embarrass yourself.
You're not getting any Steve Perry, who we're about to talk
about. Yeah, pull up some Keep On Loving You and you'll kill.
Interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, not their best song. In fact, I think on that very album, they have a way superior song.
I'm glad you think that. Fuck you.
That,
I can't tell if you're pulling it up or if you're just Googling yourself again.
That's what I do.
Okay.
I got to find the song now. It's too. Now we're in too deep. Let's see. REO Speedwagon. Go to their... Oh, yeah. Keep On Loving You. What did we just listen to? Can't Fight This Feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Keep On Loving You is my favorite. Yeah, this is my favorite one.
This is a banger. Oh, no, but no, that's not the one I like. I like Take It On The Run.
Oh, another good one. Yeah.
Should we do a REO Speedwagon episode right now?
I don't mind it. I think we just did it.
All right. We don't have time for that. It's time to get into it.
Kind of feels like we have time for that. We're acting like we have all the time in the world. Welcome to the Throwback Pod.
It's time to get into the song and the moment in history where all of the greatest and most important artists in American music gathered in the same studio in Los Angeles to save the world. These are the kind of stakes that we talked about in the 80s.
Yeah. And they did.
And listen to that. Stupid.
It's like the beginning of a movie from 19... like the HBO logo is coming on the screen.
Very unnecessary. I mean, Quincy Jones, you got to give him a lot of credit. But did this song have to be 7 minutes long? All right, here we go. We Are the World... USA for Africa.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all.
We're going to play the whole thing right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Then play it back again.
Okay.
Type 14. Somewhere we'll soon make a change. We all a part of. And it's interesting. So everybody's, these are all different biggest artists of the time, but it's all building up to Michael.
Of course it is.
And he, of course, has to sing the chorus. Here's the hook. So
we had a
let's
year.
Get into it.
We had a year to prepare for this. So let me ask you this question now. After
yes.
we just listened to that, should we do the artist first and then end the episode with this and just cut out what we just did?
No, I think we got to set the stage for everything.
Okay, that's good too.
Yeah,
I just want the audience to know that we never had that conversation.
No, right.
I like it. I like it. I'm just, you know, just
a lot of things have not changed.
Right.
And a lack of preparation remains at the forefront. So anyway, charity single. It was written by Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie, who you hear first in this song, produced by Quincy Jones. It's Bruce.
It's Bruce.
We are the children. We are the one to make a brighter day.
Sales in excess of 20 million copies, the ninth best-selling physical single of all time, came on the heels, as I mentioned, Do They Know It's Christmas by Band-Aid, which is a collection of UK pop stars, released in December 84. And that was fronted by Sir Bob Geldof. And obviously that led to the Live Aid concert. And it kick-started like this craze in the 80s of artists banding together for a cause. This cause was to help deal with the starvation going on in Ethiopia and millions of people dying. And I think it's a good place to start, Bob, with in this documentary, which you can watch on Netflix. And if you haven't watched it yet, maybe watch it. Pause this. Watch it.
Yeah, I would recommend that.
I would recommend it as well. And Sir Bob Geldof shows up at the studio. And I love it because it's filled with all these pop stars that just got back from the American Music Awards.
I mean, just the image of seeing them all together and like, you know, that whole process of like going to an award show, even in the 80s, you're doing the red carpet, you're getting interviewed, you're sitting for hours on end. Some of you are performing. You're on.
Some are imbibing.
Yeah,
it's
the
mid 80s in Los Angeles, in Hollywood.
You are on all night. Like even when you're just sitting there watching the movie, like you're on and now you are in a studio with your peers, like the best of the best.
And I just love.
And looking at them all together is just incredible.
So they go straight from the AMAs, and it was all set up purposely this way because this would be the only way you can get all of them in the same spot. This is when the AMAs were as big as the Grammys, so everyone was there. And they put all these people and gave them an address to go to a studio nearby and locked them in this room for an entire night into like from about 11 p.m., let's say, till about 7 or 8 a.m. the next morning. And when they're getting ready to record and all these huge egos, and we're going to talk about some like heroes and villains of the We Are the World recording and the Netflix special. But Bob Geldof like pops up almost like out of the mist.
Yeah,
Bob Geldof,
comes
all of a sudden
nowhere.
He's there.
Comes out of nowhere.
And
with great 80s hair.
He's just there. And he's like very solemn. And he's like he's looking out at all these like coked out eyes and everyone like being all happy and, you know, basically the party. It's basically an after
party
at this point.
Right,
at this point, it's an after party from the AMAs. And he's like, I just want you all to fucking remember, this is me paraphrasing, that we're here for a reason to save lives. And you have to understand that. And like Geldof drops this like big Geldof energy, big Sir Bob energy, Bob, maybe you should lean into it. A little Sir Bob energy.
I don't know. It's like a pretty big party foul. He really brings it down.
Big time.
He really brings it
down.
And
you see everyone's faces drop and they're like, oh, wait. This is actually supposed to be serious.
Right. Like I have to put effort and care.
And that's the point where Quincy Jones like slides like a metal bar across the exit nobody gets out. Well, almost nobody. We'll get to who did get out. So I got to give like an early winner to Geldof for putting all these pop stars in their place with a very big Geldof energy message to them, why they're here and what this is for.
Yeah. And the doc, like that moment where he addresses them, it's balls. I mean, you're looking like across at like Ray Charles and Michael Jackson and Bob Dylan and Billy fucking Joel. And you're able to like compose yourself and just be like, hey guys, shut the fuck up and do your job.
Exactly.
It's bad.
This is serious.
Yeah.
Like this is serious. And at that point, and they even say in the documentary, like, I was like, oh, this isn't just like a party. We're supposed to be trying to save lives hypothetically. Where do you want to go, Bob? You got a winner? You got a big winner? Where do you want to go with this?
That's a good question. Well, all right. So, I mean, this episode, by the way, sponsored by The Greatest Night in Pop on Netflix, right? Like, we're getting paid for this?
We are not getting paid.
Oh, we're not getting
paid.
Not by
Netflix, no. Not on any level. But
fuck,
it is
still
some free advertising. Welcome back if you just watched it. How good was that?
Way better than this. I mean, so many winners. I don't know. Do you have a... You have a playlist ready to go.
Yeah, I think a good way to kind of get into it is, so you heard, and the song, let's be honest about the song. I think Bruce, who, by the way, Springsteen has a big performance in this, and he sits down to be interviewed. You could tell that the way the wording is, like Bruce, for example, who was at the heights of his power at that point, is like, you know, the song is the song. Like, it's not a great song.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a, it wasn't really a bad, the song was a vehicle to do what it did, which is raise millions of dollars in relief.
Right.
So the song itself, while it's kind of got a memorable hook, is a little bit meh. So,
no, I disagree. It's a great song.
You think it's a great song?
I think it's great. Like, listening to it again, I mean, so here's the thing. Let's go time travel. In 1985, as little kids, five-year-olds.
Yep.
This was the best, greatest thing you ever heard. Because it was everybody in the, it was everybody that you heard on the radio together.
Right. It and was like, almost like the cartoon All-Stars Against Drugs, where all of a sudden everyone got on the same page and did this together. It's hard to, like, in my mind ever think that this didn't exist.
Right. Like, you know, like your kid brain can't be cynical or critical or anything. You're just like, oh, this is the best. Like, I see it with my kids when, like, I throw something at them where I'm like, oh, this is, like, you know, three of the best basketball players of all times in the same, but they're like, oh, that's the best. You can't argue the best. So seeing everybody that was the best, you were just convinced this song was the best thing ever.
It was kind of like the dream team of songs.
Yes, so, exactly.
And what I guess what I mean is it's like not a bad song. But here's Bob, by the way. We're saving our own life. But like, it's, I feel like it's, since it feels like it's always existed, I can't even like figure out whether it's good or
There's
bad.
No
it
way
just
to, like,
is.
Properly evaluate it. But, you know, we've done a good job, I would imagine. I know I have, I'm sure you have too, of not listening to this for 30 years.
Right. So, well, that's what I mean. Nobody's listening to the song after the fact, except for in these types of setups where you're revisiting it as a, like a, whether it's a TV special or a podcast you're listening to. It's not a song like, oh, I got to go play We Are the World. I love that song.
Right. But these kinds of songs don't last forever. Like, any song that even kind of sounds like this isn't on the radio anywhere, or you're not going to go back and listen to it that
often. There was, after this, there was Farm Aid.
Right.
Don't even remember what that song was. There was a heavy metal. We might have to dig up that song just to hear what they thought they could do with it. And to your point, like, nobody remembers what any of those songs were. But anybody could sing the Michael Jackson hook and the chorus hook of this song.
So I think they did what they had set out to do, and that's why let's award our first winner, besides Mr. Geldof, to the man himself, Lionel Richie.
Yeah, you got to give Richie pop.
Number one winner. I mean, not only does
he come
out looking incredible in the doc, but what he did that day and, like, the week leading up to it, like, writing the song with Michael Jackson, which I can't imagine was easy.
He talks about it. Talking about it. He's at Michael Jackson's house, and there's a snake crawling around, like in the bookcase.
And then going on to host the American Music Awards, hosting it and singing two songs, and then going
and sweeping the awards,
winning six awards, I think, and then going and recording the song all night long, all night long, Dan.
Oh, he did it, Bob. All right, here's a little Lionel Richie. And by the way, all the songs you're going to hear are kind of predated or were in the culture when the We Are the World came out.
Yeah, like we didn't pick like a Commodore song.
Right. So this was, Lionel Richie had a huge album in 1984, and here was the lead single. I feel like I slept on Lionel Richie a little bit general.
He was big in the Castrone house in the 80s.
I think a good way to do this is we could share songs that we like from the artists involved and then kind of talk about their contribution to the documentary.
Yeah, that
I
makes sense. I think
that's a good way to do it. Richie was, we're figuring it out in real time. So he was the ringleader. He co-wrote the song. He obviously was a guy that everyone respected. I remember, I guess from my memories, I just kind of remembered the Hello video, which is also on this album.
Right.
And how awful the bust of him looked.
That was hilarious. That was like the first round of YouTube in the early 2000s where it's like, oh, we could now see these things on demand and laugh about them.
Yeah.
I feel like the Hello video really benefited from that, where people were like, oh my God, we could laugh at that terrible bust again.
I feel like Papa Video.
And Papa Video too, yeah.
You know, did a nice job. Where's Papa Video?
You know, one of my first ever celebrity interviews I ever did in my life was Lionel Richie.
I bet he was a dream.
He was so nice, and I remember he had on such great boots. But I was like, I need fucking boots like Lionel Richie.
How much money does Lionel Richie
have? That guy's got great shoes.
My God.
But you know what? I feel like he needed this doc in a way for his legacy, because nobody talks about him the way that we talk about people that have been around since the 70s that have contributed so much.
True.
He's kind of been relegated to like America's Got Talent judge, 80s, not joke, but 80s guy.
Right.
I feel like people don't really consider him like, oh, he's one of the greats of popular music.
Maybe, I don't know. Like, I think he has like a Presidential Medal of Freedom. I think, and all that, and he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think he is properly kind of venerated, maybe not by people like us. So maybe it's good to...
I know, but I want people like us to respect him as the man and not just Nicole Richie's dad.
Dang.
Let's not forget that.
Remember that. Do you have a Richie song you want to play, or does that cover the Richie side?
No, it covers it. We got a lot of artists.
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of go in order of when they show up on the song. Up next was Stevie Wonder. They all got a line. Only the big ones got lines. I was thinking about this. So there's like 30 people that do the song.
Yeah,
We Are the World, and like 10 of them get actual solos. And then I was looking at like some of the people that didn't get solos. Like Smokey Robinson has to be uber pissed that he doesn't get a solo, right?
Yeah. I mean, he showed up for the doc. He showed up. He sat there. He looked like a turtle. He looked like man.
Looked like a strange-ass turtle.
Who became a weird-ass turtle. A prehistoric turtle.
He's letting everybody know, I'm the one who could talk to Michael.
Yeah, like I was, you know, it's because I'm Smokey Robinson. I knew Michael since he was a baby, and I've done everything.
You can't give Smokey a line?
Doesn't get a line.
I think about that with Lindsey Buckingham too, Fleetwood Mac. Like, they obviously wanted Stevie Nicks.
Right. I'm not so surprised that he didn't get a line.
Right. They wanted Stevie Nicks. Lindsey doesn't get a line, but I guess Lindsey's okay, even though I'm sure his ego was hurt. I mean, we're talking about the biggest. And speaking of Quincy Jones, like, he famously pins a message above the door to the studio that says, check your ego at the door, quite literally. Check your ego at the door. So I guess these guys, here's what I think. I want a part two, and we talked about this with our wives.
But, yes.
What we wanted more from the documentary, which is not a ton because it was so well done. But I want a little section about the people that were bitches. Like people that were complaining. There were people complaining in that studio about their role or lack thereof. I just got this hunch that Buckingham... complaining behind the scenes.
I want people complaining now too, because we'll talk more about this later, but like the fact that Huey Lewis was kind of a last minute replacement to get a really big part of the song. I bet there are people only learning that now.
They're like, what?
What the fuck?
Wait, so I had another chance?
Yep.
And we're going to get to why Huey had that opportunity in a bit, maybe when we get to our villains.
The villains of the night.
I've been waiting for this moment so long to really have something to dig my claws into about that particular artist.
Oh, I know.
All right, here's Stevie Wonder, who was supposed to co-write the song, which is funny. Yeah. It was supposed to be Lionel, Stevie, and Michael writing the song. Stevie doesn't show up.
Yeah, I think I went to go get a drink during that part. So what happened exactly?
Stevie just didn't know what was going on. You know, he's blind. He wasn't sure what was going on.
Well, is he though?
And then, that's people talk about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, here was his big hit right around the tape, right around the recording of We Are the World.
Yeah. No
flowers bloom. Did you ever see The Woman in Red, by the way? That was the movie with Gene Wilder that the song was on the original motion picture soundtrack.
No, never.
Great. Can I have it then?
No, you can't.
Why not? Well, it's sentimental, tacky crap. That's why not. Do we look like the kind of store that sells I just called to say I love you? Go to the mall.
What's your problem?
Do you even know your daughter? There's no way she likes that song. Oh, is she in a coma?
Oh, okay, buddy. I didn't know it was pick on the middle-aged square guy day. My apologies. I'll be on my way.
Bye-bye.
Fuck you.
Barry. Played by Jack Black in High Fidelity.
Oh, so good.
Burying the dad who wanted to get that particular Stevie Wonder song for his daughter. I think that made me... I remember when that movie came out in 2000 thinking like it was weird that I was 20 or 19 at the time and I was more on the middle-aged dad side of things. I was like, that's a good song. Yeah. Daughter likes it. I always... Like this song makes me... That song by Stevie Wonder makes me think of like my youth more than almost any other song. Just the feeling of it.
Yeah, 100%.
So, but to know that the real Stevie heads out there see it as like his nadir on some level, like a crash commercial cash in the 80s that made him seem, you know, so far from his 70s peak. I disagree.
But that was the 80s.
So leave us alone.
I mean, you're talking to two 5 year olds in 1985, but that was it. That was what the 80s sounded like.
You know, let's just listen a little more to Barry because he kind of digs into it a little bit more.
Crimes perpetrated by Stevie Wonder in the 80s and 90s go. Sub-question, is it in fact unfair to criticize a formerly great artist for his latter-day sins? Is it better to burn out than to fade away?
Barry, I'm fucking broke!
I hate that element of music fandom.
Right.
Being told what you're allowed to like.
Well, this actually got me thinking of one of the other things we watched in Big Bear. Was you found 25 Lame on YouTube, right. Which if you don't know 25 Lame, it was when it was an MTV special that aired the
crazy day, this exists
that aired 1999, one day before Y2K.
That was a replay.
That was probably a replay.
Another like artifact of the era in 1999. Yeah. The fact that it was turning 2000 was such a big deal that when MTV was running just content during that day before New Year, they just had an icon. They had like a scroll.
A bug on the top
that just said one day till 2000. Like, okay. We were excited.
Yeah. It was John Stewart, Dennis Leary, Janine Garofalo, and somebody else. Who was the fourth?
Who was another prominent
comedian.
Who could it be?
It was somebody very respected.
You guys want some cookies? Cookies?
Catan. Cookies. Very out of place, by the way, for the record, as we revisited it.
Yeah, punching out of his weight class there. Just did not really
like Leary, keep up. Garofalo, and Stewart. I mean, these are grizzled New York comedians.
Yeah.
And then Catan was like the flavor of the month on SNL at the time.
All literally smoking cigarettes on camera and just shitting on the 25 lamest videos while Catan desperately tries to keep up with him. And he's handed props.
They use him as the puppy dog.
Right.
And you could tell the real comedians, quote unquote,
they're being nice.
Are being nice, but also like you could tell they're just like, this guy's not like us.
But the reason I bring it up is because we watched it and we're like, holy shit, this is so not only poorly produced, like to the level of this podcast. Like they just didn't know what the hell they were doing. But
Leary can't even do the teleprompter at the time.
They're so fucking cynical and 1990s Gen X jaded, shitting on everything.
Right.
Just very overtly like, this is dumb. This is stupid. And this Jack Black element of talking about Stevie Wonder is that same 90s kind of like, let's just shit on things.
Right.
And I feel like a few years later, it started going the other way. And now you can't even make fun of it. Now you can't say anything. But I think this was like, we reached our peak of being able to just hate on things.
There's a moment that still sticks with me in the 25 Lame special. When Dennis Leary, they're talking about the Separate Ways video from Journey, which honestly was a tremendous, some of the picks are very miss, hit or miss on that special. But Separate Ways, check it out on YouTube. Is one of the lamest videos you'll ever see.
Right.
Okay. But to hear Dennis Leary on a show on MTV when a lot of people were still watching MTV, just be so open and be like, here's the thing about Steve Perry, an incredible voice, dead from the neck up. One of the ugliest people you ever see. But what a voice on him. It was just like people aren't allowed to share opinions that are And I understand that's mean spirited on,
right.
But also like, you're just like, you're not allowed to do that.
No, anymore. You're not. If you wrote a movie or made a movie now where somebody shits on Stevie Wonder for 30 seconds, that would immediately get pulled and people would be like, how dare you? What are you doing?
I have another winner, by the way.
Good.
Kenny Rogers.
I think so too.
So Kenny Rogers, what I like about Kenny Rogers in, because I know nothing about Kenny Rogers.
Guy loves his chicken.
Right. I know he has a popular chicken chain. Is he still with us? Did we lose Kenny? I think we lost Kenny.
We lost his face, but I think he's still with us.
Oh, that's right. Kenny Rogers is a country icon.
Right.
And he is one of the, in this big stew in the studio. And he's one of the very few artists that they handed everyone the white USA for Africa sweatshirt.
Uh-huh.
He puts a sweatshirt on.
Of course he does.
It's a free sweatshirt.
Free sweatshirt.
Love it. And then they're like, oh yeah, in the middle of the night, we had to feed everybody. And they went to Roscoe's and got the chicken and waffles. Kenny ends up with a cheeseburger.
Of course he does.
Kenny's housing that cheeseburger. And Kenny's got a nice, like, you know, I've always liked Kenny Rogers has got a nice dad bod frame on him, yeah, for a pop star. And I'm just thinking, who is the most likely? They talk about how the lights are really hot in the studio.
Yeah.
Who's the most likely to be kind of lighting up that studio with some farts sneaking out? It's Kenny.
Oh, that guy was just letting him rip, and he's a celebrity. He's not going to apologize, or he's just going to. That was
if
me.
If you want to talk about letting one go,
yeah,
in the best place on those risers.
But you know what they say about farts, Dan? You got to know when to hold them. Boom. Hey, so I'm a comedy writer who's looking for work. If anybody's hired now.
By the way, this is Islands in the Stream with Dolly Parton. Where's Dolly?
Where was Dolly?
We need, and they, that's another part of the documentary I would have liked to, who was asked and didn't make it. Like Madonna, right, didn't get asked, which was, right, crazy. But I get it because it was early 85. So she had just kind of broken through. But like,
I did follow up on that because, yeah, we were talking about that. She was on tour.
So she wasn't available. Just like Van Halen wasn't available.
It would have been more like logistically, but they didn't even ask her.
They didn't even ask her.
Right.
We got to get mid-80s Dolly. I mean, do we remember what was going on with Dolly Parton in the mid-80s? You got to add her to the mix.
Yeah, that would have been a big get.
Anyway, so Kenny ripping beefers. I feel confident it was happening. I was just looking at the way he was filling out the sweatshirt and the way he was housing that cheeseburger. He needed to squeeze a couple out.
To be clear, the doc doesn't touch on this, but we know.
Yes, right. This is a theory.
Right. Which if they would have had more time, then maybe.
All right, you want to throw out another winner and or loser?
Well, let's go loser since we're in the country space.
Okay.
Let's throw Waylon into the losers. Waylon Jennings.
Waylon, when it was okay to be kind of openly racist, the Waylon Jennings story. Although I should say that, like, this is why these documentaries are good. Did people even know this? I don't know.
No. And you know what? I think, like, you can jump to the he's racist because at a certain point in the song, Stevie Wonder was pushing to add some new lyrics.
Oh, it got too black for
in
Waylon.
Swahili.
Which was an insane part of the documentary. And a bad idea.
A bad idea. So, all right. So I'm going to do what I always do. I'm going to defend the racist.
Right. On X, if you can.
So Elon and I, as I hinted to earlier, I'm pro Elon. No. So Stevie Wonder's adding these weird Swahili lines.
Stevie, who was supposed to co-write the song and never showed up.
Right.
And then shows up the night of the recording. He's like, oh, we writing the song now? And they're like, Steve, like, we wrote the fucking song and we're recording it now. And now you're trying to bring in some Swahili. People don't speak that.
It's 3 o'clock in
Ethiopia.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning. These new lines are being added. Waylon Jennings also probably housed a couple of cheeseburgers.
Kenny Rogers can't even get to the bathroom. He's struggling so hard. And you're going to now try to add a whole new element to the song with a different language?
Yeah. So Waylon Jennings storms off in a huff and he's like, I don't know what he said. What is it? I think
this good old boy don't do Swahili.
I don't do Swahili. I don't know what you're saying. I'm not saying
that. He steps off the riser and goes home.
Goes home. Leaves.
Now, here is, from my opinion, from my standpoint, Waylon's, we don't want to hear Waylon's inner monologue, but I'm going to say that it just got too black for Waylon at that point. He was like, I'm doing this thing, this Africa song. I was kind of on board with it, but now this is a bridge too far for me.
I think
I'm taking a walk.
Okay, I think it's safe to assume that. But I also want to just throw in a little more of it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you have an art, you have artists throwing out ideas and now you're brainstorming. You're like,
but this particular idea.
Fair enough. All right, I'm not going to, I mean, okay.
I feel like there are some ideas that Waylon would have played ball with. And even if he didn't agree with it in terms of the tone of the song or the idea, he would have probably hung around.
I guess what I'm getting at is I'm not going to delete Waylon from my iPod for this.
All right, so
but I am going to look at him.
Waylon's
a
winner for you and a loser for everyone else. I got it.
A winner for whites, Dan.
Well, okay. Listen, we need to be careful here, Bob. We
you
just
can find me on X.com.
We're right. We got an election coming up, Bob. You're going to announce who you're supporting, but I think I know. So all right, so Waylon Jennings,
loser,
a loser. And you know what? I wonder. I have to assume Waylon's no longer with us. Did he do the Monday Night Football song? I have so many blind spots with country music. Yeah, I can't even wrap my head around it.
Waylon died in 2002.
Okay. Like, I wonder if that was a story that he walked off or if that only came to light now. Waylon Jennings stands out there. Let us know.
Yeah.
All right. Let's throw out another winner.
I have a winner.
Go ahead.
Diana Ross.
Okay.
I have a straight up crush on Diana Ross now.
Are you just saying this because you just sided with Waylon Jennings on the race issue?
I mean, maybe.
This does balance the scales a little bit.
Thank God.
Smart. Smart.
Yeah. I think she is so beautiful in this documentary and so like lovable. She just comes off great.
It ends with near the end of it, of the documentary, they talk about how everyone is going home after hours and hours and hours in the studio. She hangs around.
Yeah.
Because she said, I didn't want it to end. I don't want it to end because she... Aww. Some people got it.
Yeah.
Some people understood what the event was. Some people didn't. And Diana got it.
Got it.
And she is. She's hot.
So hot. She was 41, I think, or 40 when they did that.
Wow. Yeah. Here we go. Here's a little Diana Ross. I never thought this would happen on the show.
Never.
Look at us. Growth. I guess I knew Mo Money, Mo Problems. This was the sample.
Yeah.
But this documentary had me revisiting or visiting Diana Ross's discography, and here we are. So anyway, she gets it, and she's a huge star. She gets a solo line, of course.
She also wears the sweatshirt for a bunch of the...
She sure does.
She sure does.
In fact, you could tell like how much the artist was held in regard about where they come in on the song.
Yeah.
So with We Are the World, she comes in on the first chorus with Michael.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in my Diana Ross research / like just looking at pictures of her from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
She was named, I believe it was Billboard Magazine's Entertainer of the Century.
Yeah. Since we're a little too young in this case to really... understand the Temptations and her solo career. The Supremes, excuse me. And her solo career and then everything that happened into the 80s. Like, you knew she was a massive name.
Right.
Like, you know, like, Beyonce, for instance, sees her as an idol and she will name check. We kind of just missed it, though.
Yeah.
So, like, we're getting the end of her, like, reign of supreme power. Supreme.
Supreme. Nicely done.
Got it.
Damn, that was good.
Man, I can't believe people went a year without hearing this.
I remember watching The Wiz as a kid, but I mean, very vaguely.
Right, with Michael Jackson playing the Cowardly Lion, I believe.
I think I am now firmly out of my Waylon Jennings defense.
You've seen The Wiz. You can't possibly be siding with Michael. So Diana, big W. I'll also throw out. Now let me say it. I got to give Bruce a lot of pop here. So Bruce Springsteen, I remember on this very podcast, probably about 5 years ago, talking about, you know, how Taylor Swift, I thought, was the next Bruce Springsteen, or she was Bruce Springsteen for this generation, that she was that big. And then she ended up turning into Michael Jackson.
I know.
I don't think anybody really saw this coming. But to have Bruce Springsteen in January of 1985 when they recorded this, I think it's very cool, especially for like the Springsteen fans out there. The backstory that we learn in the documentary, he had just, you know, Born in the USA is one of the biggest albums that's ever been released.
And it's also our biggest episode on Spotify.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Wow. Tent. Maybe we should do a Ghost of Tom Joad. That, I feel like that would connect.
That's
with
what
people.
The fans want.
Tens of millions of copies sold of that album. 20, right. 30, 40 million. And then he goes on one of the biggest tours of the 80s, the Born in the USA tour, that happens to end in goddamn Syracuse in January.
Buffalo, right? Did you say Buffalo?
It was Buffalo, upstate New York, western New York. And there's a blizzard, of course, because that's what happens in upstate New York. And he has to get on a plane after the last night of the Born in the USA mega tour that lasts like 2 years to fly. Again, people who get it, yep. Bruce Springsteen,
yep.
Bob Dylan, people who don't, Prince. Bruce goes there not even knowing what the song is, not knowing who's going to be there. The idea of what it was about was enough for Springsteen. And I thought hearing and just seeing him, like your wife, who I was watching it with, we were watching it together very late on Saturday night.
I was there too.
I don't recall you being there. I thought it was just me and your wife snuggled up on the couch together.
Were you guys snuggled on the couch?
Let's just move on.
Okay.
She kept on commenting how good looking Bruce was. Yeah, he was like 35 years old and he had gotten into great shape for this tour. And just to see Bruce at this moment in time, coming off his biggest album and doing this, and even though he was a lot different, like he's like a rock guy, and many of the people are like pure pop people, like Bruce, you could tell is comfortable in this group.
Yes.
And enjoying himself. Here's a little Cover Me from Born in the USA. But I think it's so cool that getting Bruce, that's such a coup by the documentary to get him to sit down.
Yeah.
Because there's a level of gravitas to hear Bruce talking about that moment.
Heather, who has really bad taste in guys overall, I would say.
Well, self-evident.
Yeah. She was like gushing about how hot he was. Where I think, obviously, when you watch the documentary, he looks great. But in the shots from the music video, there's never been an uglier man than Bruce Springsteen coming in with his face like the size of a pizza pie going,
like they were doing the fish lens from the 90s hip hop videos.
It's like a fish lens. And he looks like he just got punched in the face by Sylvester Stallone in Rocky II. And he's just like,
don't hit out of Bruce because your wife wants to bang 1985 Bruce Springsteen. I mean, it's not a good look.
I mean, she wanted to bang 1985 Rod Stewart and Phil Collins. So it's fine. She got bad taste.
While, Bob, you're closer to the refrigerator, why don't you grab a couple beers for us while I just play Footloose by Kenny Loggins?
Perfect.
All right, here we go.
No fight here.
Song sucks.
Just a couple of dudes popping brews and listening to Footloose by Kenny Loggins.
Logging out like...
Log in.
I'm trying to connect Kenny Rogers' issues with bowel movement to Loggins. Kenny Loggins, I think he sings next to Bruce.
He does.
And Loggins points out that, you know, because Quincy Jones and Lionel Richie wanted to position everyone to complement each other's voices. And Kenny Loggins is a very, like, I don't know, how do you, what's a nice way to say it?
There is no nice way to say it.
It's a very smooth, almost it's M.O.R. type voice that's meant to be pleasant on the ears and like, I don't know, a dentist's office. And he says, Bruce being, you know, next to me, and he has a voice that it's like he just swallowed glass.
Right.
So the smoothness, I'll be nice
smooth
to Kenny and say he's got a smooth sound to him. I'll give him, I don't want to call him a loser, but he does come off as the biggest kind of square of the group.
Yeah, he comes off as a bit of a dork, a lot of a dork, who's just like happy to be there, which you can't blame the guy. But Especially now, like looking where he's at, he's like, oh yeah, that was the coolest. I was invited.
Right.
I got to go.
Let's talk about somebody who didn't seem necessarily happy to be there, but I'm going to put him in the winner's category, Bob. And I know this is a figure that has immense meaning to you. Let's talk a little Bob Dylan.
Let's do that.
In some ways,
definitely a winner.
In some ways, Bob Dylan is the most memorable aspect of this documentary to me. Bob Dylan in 1985, I'm going to guess you would know better than me. He's in his mid to late 40s.
Yep.
He's a incredibly important figure in popular music and the history then as he is now, but completely out of step with the 1980s, especially the mid 80s, especially that room.
Oh yeah.
And
he's a long way away from this.
And I mean, as a Dylan super fan, Bob, take me through your thought process as you watched him stand in the middle of that group, unable to or unwilling to even mouth along to the song until he finally kind of gets over the hump with the help of some friends.
I mean, he was the guy. He's the guy that like didn't do the homework, or the guy that like shows up at the chorus recital when you're in elementary school. And it's like, all right, everybody. And you're like, I don't know the words to this. I don't even know what I'm doing right there. And you're just standing there knowing that, like, hoping the parents don't look at you as you're just kind of mouthing along to the everybody else singing.
A fun game is to watch that documentary and then pause every time they show Dylan looking dazed in this group of people singing the chorus over and over again. And just like insert an inner monologue.
Yeah.
Of a, like, what am I doing here?
I mean, every wide.
How did I get here?
Every wide shot. He's just kind of standing there like he out of place and confused. And he's Bob Dylan. Like, you know, the moment that they show everybody getting autographs, which is really cool. And, you know, I think in that moment.
Bob's not getting autographs.
No, I think he was probably getting a lot because he's like Bob Dylan. And
do you think Bob Dylan? No, he was giving autographs.
Giving. Yes. Yes.
Bob's not collecting any. No. He's not getting Kim Carnes' autograph.
No, he was not. But I think that it was so, I mean, when else in your life when you're at that level of fame are you ever going to be around that many famous people in a room like that working together? Like that doesn't, it just doesn't happen. So I think for him to just be one of the crowd was so confusing and off-putting to him and just unlike anything he had experienced.
And here's where, you know, I respect the hell out of Dylan. I've never been like a super fan, but I like a lot of his songs also. But it to see him being that uncomfortable, but he's there for the cause. Like, yes, he believes in what he was sold and told, which was this could help a lot of people that don't have a lot of help. And so for him, and as someone who also similarly can feel uncomfortable in crowds, but imagine whatever, however, people that have that similar feeling at parties or whatever. Whatever you feel, turn that up about 150%, and yeah, that's the way Dylan at least looks in that room for the first like 45 minutes of the documentary.
And just even the way that he can't get the hang of what he's supposed to be singing, it's very...
He almost like looks like Private Pyle in Full Metal Jacket at times. Like, he looks disturbed that he's there.
He's just in another world. And what I loved about it as a fan was like, I feel like he's had such great control over his image in a way, like what he lets people see and what he puts out there for decades and decades. And No Direction Home is one of like the greatest things ever, and that's him narrating it and, you know, being interviewed, seeing him just kind of in his element, like out of his element, but like without putting it on for the cameras or presenting himself in a certain way was fascinating.
Very awkward. And then I thought it was a really, again, showing like what it really was all about was then him sitting at the piano, I think it was with Stevie Wonder, I think with Quincy Jones, and yeah, working out his solo. And it works. Like, when, I guess to your point that it's actually a good song, like the fact that these things all kind of come together and sound right, and he does have his moment in the song, and it's, you know, it's unmistakable who's singing once right, he's on mic, and it doesn't sound too out of place, which is a credit to everyone because he couldn't be more out of place during the recording.
Well, what I loved about the doc is they explain how when they were writing the song, Lionel Richie explains, like, we wanted to make sure everybody singing sang as themselves. They weren't trying to write a song where everybody was hitting the same key and everybody was kind of blending in. It's like everybody that has their moments is themselves. So I think for Bob Dylan, I don't know if he ever got that message, because it seems like he was trying to sing mm-hmm. in a way that he can't sing. And then once he sat down there with Stevie And he was like, no, just here's how you do it, Bob. And Stevie was doing an impression of Bob Dylan to Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bob's like, oh, that's what I'm doing. Like, I could still be me. I don't need to all of a sudden sing like Kenny Loggins.
Right.
I'm okay.
So yeah. So good job, Bob. Got a lot of respect for you. Bob has got to be getting up there now, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Robert Zimmerman, another Robert though.
I know, but you know, goes by Bob. Self-identifies as a Bob.
That's good. Is he the number one Bob?
Yeah. I mean, ever or currently a lot?
Like on the Bob power rankings, is Dylan number one? Like Bob Backlund obviously has to be up there.
Bob Backlund is up
Geldof,
there.
Geldof, you know, he's got to be pretty high up there.
I think Bob Hope is number one.
Hope.
Yeah, I think Hope is the all-time number one.
Okay. That's fair. So we have villains. We have, you know, well, depending on who you ask, Waylon Jennings walking off because it got too black. Al Jarreau.
I think there are a lot of our listeners who would agree with me that Waylon Jennings was an okay guy.
Misunderstood. Yeah. Listen, I don't want to sing Swahili either. Al Jarreau, who I don't know. I'm not, again, a little out of my lane, so I'm not going to bury him because he must have been an important figure at the time to get not only invited to this.
Right.
Quincy must have liked him a whole bunch he gets a solo in it. But we learn that he was drunk and was messing up the song. And basically anything that Bob Geldof said, Al must have been just like chugging wine and he missed the whole point of it. Yeah. It was an after party for Al. But to me, it's time to talk about it, Bob. I've been waiting for this moment.
You really have.
It's so infuriating to live in a world where this artist is held in such high regard, and anything that you could resemble as criticism of either his output as an artist or his character is swept away.
Oh man, I wish this was on video. I feel like this could be your Stephen A. Smith kind of going nuts to a camera moment right now. This is going to be so beautiful.
And I would say almost in defense of this individual, part of the frustration is I haven't. And people like me because I know they're out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Waylon Jennings is an example. No, there are people out there who like, what is it about this guy, this worship of him as not just a great musician, but as a god? But why don't we have something we could really say, but here's an example of why he wasn't such a great person, not an artist of the highest esteem? Well, what about this? This is that thing. Prince is a fucking monster in and around this recording. Your God. You're the purple one. Mr. The artist formerly known as Prince. Mr. Symbol himself. Think about that. Think, Bob, that this recording that was meant to save millions of lives in Africa, everyone else checking their ego at the door. What does Prince want? Prince wants his own studio adjacent to all these other artists for a guitar solo.
That's not in the song.
There's no guitar solo.
No.
Prince, while Bob Dylan is fucking dying in that studio.
Kenny Rogers just ripping fart Kenny after Rogers, fart after fart, begging to use the bathroom.
Fucking Kenny Rogers' ass is exploding. But he's in the studio, okay? Bob Dylan, arguably the most important figure in popular music in the 20th century, half dead in the fucking studio, flatlining. You have to get out the, what do they call those things?
The paddles.
Yeah, paddle him. You got to paddle his ass to get two lines.
Ray Charles, like 111 years old.
Charles doesn't even know what's going on. Charles is out to lunch, okay? But Prince cannot check his ego at the door. Prince is at a party somewhere in Hollywood. Prince could go to the AMAs, Bob. Prince was sitting in the front row at the AMAs. Why? Because he had put out Purple Rain, and he was up for 100 different awards. And when he won an award, Prince goes up on stage to accept it with who? His fucking bodyguard? Some 7 foot tall oaf just to show I'm different than everyone else here. I'm so popular and so famous and so important. I need to bring my bodyguard up on this. How everybody's like, how cool. Oh, that's so cool that Prince brought up his bodyguard on stage to accept the award. So Prince, he can go to the award show where he's getting honored and getting treated like the golden god he sees himself as and as so many other people see him as. But when it's time to deliver a couple lines for a charity single that could literally save lives, okay, in Africa, Prince, nowhere to be seen. In fact, he writes a fucking ransom note, basically, that says, I will come if you make sure to make it clear to all those stars that I'm bigger than them. I get my own studio. And poor Sheila E.'s in there.
I was going to say.
That's, like his protege, maybe his girlfriend at the time.
I think so.
They bring her in because they think they're getting Prince. And poor Sheila E., who's seems like a really nice woman, that she eventually excuses herself from the recording because she's like, I know why I'm here. Like, right. I was kind of here because I was they here want
to,
Prince
I was,
here.
I was here to meet Waylon Jennings.
And she was like, I knew Prince was never going to come. I was here to meet him. I knew he was never going to come because he's not comfortable around people. Bob Dylan's not comfortable around people. Bob Dylan is a corpse in the middle of this group, but he's there barely alive because it mattered. And all these other people got it. But Prince didn't get it. And I want everybody to remember that. And go read up on Prince and Sinead O'Connor too while you're at it. Okay? All right, I'm done.
No, that was something. God damn.
And his songs are fine. Can we calm down with the songs a little bit?
He's got 11 good songs.
11 solid songs. A couple transcendent ones. Everybody, nobody, I mean, we talked about this on the Purple Rain podcast. Everyone acting like Prince in the 90s and 2000s. I didn't hear one motherfucker talking about how good Prince was.
No.
Until Prince was no longer with us.
Yeah.
So let's not rewrite history. And now I'm going off on a different tangent. But anyway, Bob, Prince wasn't there.
You said everything. You said it all. We'll be back in 1 year. I mean, what else could you possibly add to that? Yeah, he comes off like a piece of shit.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, what else could you say? Right.
Getting it.
Winner, Sheila E., because she does come off like a self-aware, I saw what this was. I was only invited because I was Prince's girlfriend. And then when I realized he wasn't coming, what am I doing here?
Right. She knew that she wasn't really necessarily needed. And I feel sorry for her too, because she had enough self-awareness to know that if she didn't have that connection to Prince, she wouldn't have even been there in the first place, which is why once the organizers knew that Prince wasn't going to come, that it just felt like an awkward situation.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you care about your girlfriend or whatever, don't leave her hanging in that studio.
Don't leave her hanging, dude.
And she's not allowed to tell Prince that, because no one's allowed to tell Prince anything.
I think Prince, so everything you said is 100% on point. It's not going to sway a single voter into the anti-Prince. He is a Trump-like figure to Gen X and millennials who have decided that he is without reproach. You cannot criticize him. The Sinead O'Connor stuff, just ignore it.
Doesn't exist.
Never happened.
Even in like the Me Too era, even in the women's rights coming to the forefront, none of that somehow gained traction.
Never happened. This documentary, not going to make a bit of difference to anybody.
Won't even be mentioned.
Yeah.
You're not even allowed to write about it.
No.
Have you seen anyone write, hey, Prince was kind of a dick during the We Are the World video shoot?
No. And now I'm worried about your career.
It's because over.
You can't go.
But I want to say that some things are worth dying for. Bob Dylan said the same thing in that studio.
He did. And he did die in that studio.
Cyndi Lauper was a hero.
Oh, total hero.
We talked about if there was a part two of the doc. I want Cyndi Lauper just kind of making people uncomfortable.
I just want more of Cyndi. Yeah.
More Cyndi. Any other heroes for you?
Huey Lewis.
Oh, big win. So Huey is the one, once Prince, again, they must have gotten some type of yes from Prince at some point, because when they write the song.
Right, he's got a solo.
And they compose the song and they figure out who goes where in terms of their range and who goes. Prince is locked in right next to, I'm trying to think who is Huey.
It was
with.
Right after, it was right after
Steve
Michael.
Perry?
No, it was Huey, Cyndi, and
it was a big one.
Shit, it was a big one. I think it might have been Steve Perry. But it would come in right after Michael does the bridge.
Right.
It was the bridge and then Huey. So that would have been Prince.
Which was purposeful. They wanted this idea of Prince and Michael Jackson next to each other, which, by the way, do some reading on that. Prince and Michael Jackson had a real rivalry, and I'm sure...
Of course.
I'm sure Prince didn't like the idea that, oh, it was Michael who was writing the song. It's right. Michael who gets the chorus and all that, and he gets the bridge.
Right.
So there's that stuff. Check your ego.
I don't care how many kids starve. I'm not following Michael in the song. So then Huey Lewis.
I can't believe you just said a sentence that had kids and Michael in it. It had nothing to do with Michael Jackson's other issues.
Well, that was my other favorite moment of the podcast, was when my wife, who was like a big Michael Jackson fan as a kid, as they're talking about how Michael, like, immediately, how Harry Belafonte was the one who kind of brought this to the attention of some people. And Michael immediately was like, yes, we have to do this. Heather goes, oh, he's such a good person. And you and I were both like, well, maybe we could postpone this conversation.
That is the power of this imperial era Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And I would say, yes, and there's all sorts of, by the way, let me just play this before we move on from Cyndi Lauper, who I just absolutely adore.
Wait a minute. Love her. Now I'm confused.
Yes.
I'm a girl. I'm a woman.
Right, and I'm Cyndi Lauper. Could we please go back to the prom now?
How do they not do another take on just one of the guys? It's not Lauper. Like, how do we get there?
Wait, was that my question when we saw the just one of the guys screening? Was the asking him how to pronounce Cyndi Lauper?
Right, and I'm Cyndi Lauper.
Like, nobody called her Lauper. No. It wasn't like a tomato-tomato thing.
No, he screwed it up and they left it
right,
in.
Right, and I'm Cyndi Lauper.
But maybe because Joyce Heiser's outrageous bosom had everyone just, like, shell-shocked on the set.
Nobody was paying attention.
And no one. That's probably what it is.
That's
Let's not overthink this.
Yeah.
Let's understand the context of that scene.
I like how instead of playing a Cyndi Lauper song, you played that clip. That's more important.
Right, and I'm Cyndi Lauper.
I should play a Cyndi song.
You to play the Goonies song? She was great.
But we're trying to be accurate to, and you can't, she has a lot of great songs. She was coming off She's So Unusual at this point. So let me give you a little bit of
this. And I think that's one of the, so they mentioned in the doc how, you know, the producers wanted Cyndi and not Madonna because of her voice.
Right.
And I think that
kind of makes sense, actually.
It makes total sense. And I think the reason there was an either or thing is, like, the media was pitting them against each other in the mid-80s. So I would imagine there could have been some ego stuff going there too, where, like, if you have her, you can't have me. Some more Prince stuff.
Well,
who knows?
Lionel Richie was on Jimmy Kimmel in February and was asked about that. And Kimmel pointed out, well, why did it have to be either or? Why couldn't it be both? And Lionel Richie said, well, there was literally half a line.
Right.
That, again, pointing out, you know, Prince, they had carved out a whole part of the song for that motherfucker. Anyway. But again, not a good excuse, because get Madonna in the room.
Right.
Now, also, Madonna is not the Madonna that we would know even 5 years later from that point. She was a huge star by then. She had done the Like a Virgin dance at the MTV Awards. So she was a big star, but she wasn't the biggest star in the world at that point.
Right.
Let's give Cyndi Lauper. If you love, you can look and you will find me. Time after time. So, if we've covered everyone else, Bob, I think we should talk about the center of everything.
Huey Lewis.
Huey Lewis.
Yeah. Let's give Huey his win, and then we can talk about the center.
All right, give Huey's win. He deserves some flowers here.
Yeah. What song do you have lined up for Huey? That's what I'm most excited about for this podcast.
Well, it's got to be off sports.
Obviously, right? Off sports, dude.
If
obviously.
It's not on sports, what are we doing here? 1984.
Oh, nice.
Little Is This, if this is it. Was this the Shark video?
Yeah, was that Stuck on You?
Might have been Stuck on
You. Yeah.
A lot of bangers.
So many bangers.
Patrick Bateman believed it.
Huey,
so do we.
Huey showed up for the interview. Looking good. Looking great.
Great.
Still. Looked great then.
And wonder about things that couldn't happen now, because we just can't talk about things anymore.
Right.
Is the Huey Lewis in the news behind the music on VH1? And one of his, like, roadies, they have a whole segment of the Behind the Music where they're like, oh, we got to talk about how big Huey's dick is.
That's a thing.
Like, how do we get this into the Behind the Music special?
Like, it's so important in the legacy of Huey Lewis in the news. We need to talk about the size of his
dick. We need to carve out a section of this 44-minute special to talk about Huey Lewis's dick. And I believe the guitar tech says his member was so impressive that if you wanted to know how deep a river was, have Huey stand on a bridge over it. I think it was something like that.
That sounds right.
They put that in the behind the music.
Yeah.
They had 44 minutes to cover the entire career.
The only other time that's
Bob, they even had like the Gwyneth Paltrow shit at the end.
The only time that's ever happened in another doc was in the Andre the Giant documentary.
But you gotta have that.
And he's Andre the Giant.
Gotta have
point.
That. So you have 2 hours.
There's only been two movies that ever talk about the subject's dick size. Andre the Giant and Huey Lewis.
Andre the Giant's 7'4", 5'20".
Yes.
And you have 2 hours of real estate. You got to talk about his dick at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, he was a big one. He had a big one.
To be expected.
Big penis. Huey Lewis on the Behind the Music, 44 minutes to cover his entire career.
On VH1.
They carve it out. It's a different world.
So just going by like ratios and whatever, Huey's dick is bigger than Andre the Giant's. If you go time spent
right.
in a documentary, the importance of it all.
I mean, to think if they thought that they had to carve out 44 minutes, that must mean it must be literally gargantuan.
So even a bigger winner for him to lug that thing into the studio to
bigger wiener
participate in this documentary. Just kind of the fucking maintenance of just dragging that thing to sit down, get it all mic'd up and everything.
I just Googled Huey Lewis penis.
This is
nothing.
This, for the record, this is your work computer.
It's been struck from the records.
Has
we're not
really?
Allowed to talk about that stuff anymore.
Oh, come on.
Anyway, Huey comes off great. He's supposed to just be in the chorus.
Yeah.
And then they're like, whose voice would kind of work here? And in the Prince slot, and Huey steps in, and you could see how bashful he is and how he feels.
Lovable.
Like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Maybe not on the level of what am I doing here as Dan Aykroyd.
How have we not talked about Dan Aykroyd?
I don't know. We have to talk about Aykroyd because the thing that really blew my mind at the end of the documentary is that Dan Aykroyd, his last name starts with A. And and because we got a lot of egos here, when they on the cover art of the LP, of the single record, they have every artist on the song. And because he was first in order, We Are the World, one of the biggest singles ever released in the history of music, the first name is Dan Aykroyd.
Unbelievable.
Does not have a line, obviously. Kind of sings in the chorus, although there's no evidence of that.
Right.
In the documentary. And he's there, and it was explained by Lionel Richie as he was there for the vibes. He shows up with, and this was before, like, these type of glasses were cool. He has, like, what would be now seen as hipster glasses, but back then would be what, like, I don't know, like Marty McFly's dad would wear. Like dorky glasses.
Like serial killer glasses.
With a shirt. I kind of want to say it was like a short-sleeved button-down shirt and a tie. And he just looks almost as uncomfortable as Bob.
Yeah. It didn't look like he was there like live, like keeping things lively. Like he just looked...
That's a crazy amount of pressure to put on Aykroyd.
Well, I told you, all I want to do now is I want to make the documentary about that night. All about Dan Aykroyd. I just want to know like his entire minute-by-minute experience.
I would think that he probably had a window when Rogers was really beefing at a certain point, and the whole place was getting stunk out to the point where people started to say things.
Do you think Aykroyd might have done the "you better know when to hold him" joke?
That's what I mean.
Fuck.
So what we don't know is that while Rogers is beefing out the joint, is Aykroyd coming in with a little like beef-related humor?
I want to be a time-traveling dad joke writer where I just go back in time and I give Dan Aykroyd that joke. Be like, next time Kenny farts, and he's like, thank you, and then I just disappear.
By the way, Steve Perry's voice, even with these in the midst of all this talent.
Stands out. Winner.
So whatever Dennis Leary said about what he looked like from the neck up, was dead.
Also,
on 25 Lame.
Also, when he came in, so we watched the video last night with Dean and Nicholas. And when Steve Perry comes in, Dean went, ugh. He goes, what's with that guy's hair?
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't look great. Yeah.
Tough, but what a voice. What a voice. So you got Steve Perry. I'll give him a win for that. And also, I feel bad still for what Dennis Leary said over a quarter century ago.
That's one of, I'd say, the most quoted things from our youth was dead from the neck up.
Dead from the neck up.
Yeah,
yes. I've said that many, many times.
We took that and ran with it for years. So thank you.
All right, let's talk about Michael Jackson. Your wife had exonerated him. Your wife, who's a teacher, by the way, had washed away all of his sins.
I don't think she was thinking about the sins, but...
sins at that point didn't exist.
As we've said in the Michael Jackson episode we did, Heather and I both have not watched the documentary.
Oh, the HBO.
The HBO yes. one that really kind of put the final line in his eulogy. About kind of final who he was.
Line. I think it became the lead of his eulogy.
Yeah. So we haven't watched that, and we're not going to.
It's a tough one. Yeah. It's a tough one. But what this, just like when we did the Dangerous podcast a few years back, that is, this moment is divorced from any of that stuff.
Yeah, of course.
And to see just his power in the moment and how it was, like we're saying, like Taylor Swift now has reached these heights of fame that are almost impossible to wrap your head around. And she would be the closest thing to Michael Jackson, but she ain't Michael Jackson.
Right.
Like, Michael Jackson is a whole other category, and the era in which he came to power was a different world as well. And I don't know, there's just that, my favorite part of the whole documentary is while the AMAs are going on, they show this music studio a couple miles away where everyone's going to be in a couple hours, and Jackson's already there with Quincy Jones, and he's going through some vocal exercises and then singing the chorus and kind of working through some things. Mm-hmm. And his voice and his presence, it's just like, this is the most famous person and like the most instantly recognizable figure that either of us will ever know. Mm-hmm. That anyone that was alive when Michael Jackson was alive, like there's no one that will ever be as big as that guy was.
Right.
And he turned out his whole life went sideways, and he may or may not have done some really bad things. And there's a lot of evidence pointing to it. He did some really bad things. But in this moment in January 1985, he was the most famous human on the planet at the height of his creative powers. And it's just cool to have that document, this kind of almost like B-roll footage of him not even realizing where the camera's on him.
Right.
Like, and even seeing after he finishes singing, he's kind of, he walks out of frame, kind of like scratching his head, like this kind of human moment. It's like just picturing as like a regular person.
Well, it reminds
at that time
you he's a human. Yeah. You forget he was actually a human because it doesn't feel that way.
Another person very uncomfortable, by the way, with crowds.
Right.
He was there.
Yeah.
He was there.
He wrote the damn song.
He wrote the fucking song.
Yeah. I mean,
he didn't ask for his own studio.
Did not. No, and he's wearing that ridiculous band conductor's suit jacket.
He looks insane.
He looks insane, but it was that's
and his nose is already like pretty jacked up by that point.
His nose is on its way to being just a complete
cartoonish
cartoon. Yeah,
like, but still a good looking guy at that point, and still looks like, you know, a modified super famous version of what he was 3 years earlier.
Yeah,
things got really weird really quick in the next 5 years after that, but this was like the last window before all that changed. Like this era from 1982, late 82 when Thriller comes out, to spring 85 when this song is released,
yeah,
is the no one will ever touch this.
Yeah,
that it's no artist will ever be as big as this artist was in that time. So people could talk about Taylor Swift, and I talk about Taylor Swift, I think she is come the closest since Michael Jackson, but she's not even close.
Well, we don't know kind of what comes next for Billy Joel in terms of now that he's back making music. Like, it could be him.
Oh, this is interesting.
It could be like the Turn the Lights Back On era.
Do you want to talk about Billy not getting a line?
He has half a line. So I was going to say Billy's a winner and a loser from the doc. Winner, because the first time you see him, he's kissing Christy Brinkley
goodbye, yeah.
And they got married like 2 weeks later. So pretty big win.
Kind of apex.
Apex Billy.
Apex for Billy, yeah.
But he does have half a line that I think he shares with Tina Turner, maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Goodbye, this is it, by the way.
Tonight. Start the fire, buddy! Come on, man, play something from the stranger!
We strictly do 80s Joel music, sir.
Why you needed me to.
Hey, Billy Joel, do up sucks!
Hey, listen! listen, motherfucker. We only sing 80s songs. Take your skank hooker wife and get the fuck out of here.
So that was from the set as well.
That was not. Studio. No, that is not correct. That is not. Now you're making
this
stuff
was
up.
Peak, by the way, doo-wop Joel era.
It was.
Which yeah. I would imagine, like,
this was Uptown Girl. This is Christy Brinkley, of course. Well, again,
I love this song.
If I had to pick like the 5 80s songs that are the most 80s, this is up there with Material Girl, with I Just Called to Say I Love You.
Like every song we've played today.
With We Are the World. I mean, it is like that was because we're in the middle of the 80s, yeah.
All right, there you go.
Winner.
I think we covered everything. I mean, if we left an artist out.
We left a few out, but it's okay because, you know, what are you going to do?
I don't know. We're hour 40 in, so yeah, that's it. We ran out of time.
We got to move on. We can't talk about Kim Carnes anymore.
Can't. Although I do love.
She was great.
I do. I'm surprised she also got the invite, but Betty Davis Eyes is a fucking banger.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not forget about that. All right. Anything we need to say, but I can't even remember anymore.
Well, you know, we're going to, like we mentioned earlier, patreon.com/throwbackpod. It's going to look a little different when you're over there now.
We've also activated the Patreon again.
The Patreon is back, yes.
So you'll be happy to know that, yes, this episode also exists with the activation of that account. We weren't going to let you down.
Yes, exactly.
Although that would have been a great move, just to keep the Patreon rolling this whole time.
But just so you guys know, every single month on like the 29th of the month, I would wake up in a panic that I forgot to pause the billing. And I would like run to my computer because if I don't do it now, I will forget it. Because the last thing I
You know what I was doing? Sleeping like a fucking baby.
I was like, the last
unaware thing, there was even a Patreon account. I don't know what Patreon
the
is.
The last thing I want to do is wake up on the first of the month and see that we billed everybody. And then it's like, I guess we got to start the podcast again.
Fuck. But I'm happy to be back, Bob.
Me
too. It's going to be a fun year.
Yeah.
Big comeback. It's not a Frasier reboot.
No, it's not a Frasier reboot.
This would be, what would be a reboot that is seen as culturally relevant?
Besides the Billy, we talked a lot about Billy. Besides the Billy Joel reboot, it would be a, what else came back?
Shit.
I mean, Will and Grace, that didn't really work out at all.
Robbie Williams?
Robbie Williams. We did enjoy that doc. We should talk about that at some point. Another day.
We'll have to definitely redo The Ego Has Landed.
We definitely have to do that.
We got to get that one rolling.
I mean, reboots famously always work perfectly, so this will too.
All right, that's it. Thank you to everybody for listening. And yes, check in on our Twitter, sorry, Bob, X handle.
Thank you.
For more details about the updates to the Patreon and how you can support us. Until then, do what you got to do.
Do it. Save the world. Hey, you know what you can go do? Go donate some money to Africa, dude.
Right. And Prince, wherever you are, buddy.
Go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself, Prince. Wait, we're not done.
What?
We forgot to add a song to the playlist.
Shit. Did we just make a Betty Davis Eyes?
It's Betty Davis Eyes.
All right, there you go. That's funny. That's perfect.